that's worth knowing. With attitude that's worth showing. Get ready to listen, let's go. The show is called Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Food for Thought. Today's going to be our wrap-up show, so it'll be a little sad saying goodbye to Will Tuttle, my co-host, but it won't be goodbye for good because we'll pop in and out of the show as we continue to go along. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good morning, Maria. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm busier, as busy as a person could possibly be, but otherwise okay.
Great.
Where are you this time, Will?
I'm in Santa Barbara, California, going to be giving some lectures here this weekend on the World Peace Diet. Just got finished with some lectures this past week in Los Angeles, where I was attending the Animal Rights Conference.
Oh, how did that go?
I think it went really well. You know, there was a good turnout. About close to 900 people were there, and from all of the United States, plus about 7 or 8 foreign countries, focusing on the connections between human cruelty to animals and the violence in the world, you know, that we do to each other, making, you know, that's especially what one of the things that I try to point out. But I actually gave the opening lecture on the history of the whole movement for compassion for animals, and tracing it all the way back to ancient times. So this is not some new thing. This is really one of the oldest causes, I think, actually. And a lot of people from the Buddha to other great spiritual teachers have all emphasized that we humans are not going to have peace, world peace, and happiness and harmony with ourselves as long as we're cruel and heartless to animals.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really good. I mean, it was great to be with so many people who are working to make a better world.
I'm sure it was great. You know, it's interesting. I met a few people I was talking to around the community pool here. And one man said, I don't know how we got on the discussion of food, but one man said that he would never eat veal because he saw the way the animals are treated. And another man said, well, what are you talking about? And then I looked at the man who said that about veal, and I said, well, have you seen how all the other animals are treated, including the chickens and the cows?
And
it's kind of interesting that they can feel sorry for a baby calf and not eat veal, but not feel sorry for the horror that goes on in the entire agribusiness.
Well, that's the thing, you know. It's that is exactly the dilemma. In the World Peace Diet, I call that the unyielding dilemma that our culture faces, that we're actually complicit in the killing of 75 million animals every day just in the United States alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of massive amount of violence can do nothing but boomerang in some way, you know. Mm. And I think that's what we're having to really look at as a culture.
Absolutely. You know, I just recently interviewed Stuart Wilde on his book Grace, Gaia, and the End of Times. And he says you can't profess to love Mother Earth and still eat her children. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, that's true. You know, it's actually right. And or you could put it the other way. You can't profess. It sounds kind of funny, but you can't profess to love God and still eat His children. You know, I mean, His creations or her creations. I don't really think of it as His or her, but you know, the create this beautiful creation, this earth, and this the abundance that we have on this planet. And to turn around and, I mean, to say on the one hand that we love life, we love God and so forth, and then turn around and kill the creations and
right,
them, but imprison
right.
them, you know, the creations mm-hmm. of the Creator. So I think this is the unyielding dilemma that we're facing. And I do think we're going to start seeing some changes. I don't think we've reached critical mass yet, obviously, but I think we're closer to it than maybe we realize.
Right. Well, you know, you can't profess to love God, go to church wearing a fur coat, and go home and have steak and eggs for breakfast. You know, it's kind of hypocritical. Well, what's interesting is people always say to me, well, okay, I know you're a vegetarian, but you eat fish, right? And I say, no, I don't. Fish is also an animal. Hello. You know, and I just, the easiest way I think to say it is I don't eat anything that had eyes or a mother.
Right, exactly. Well, it's interesting, though, there was a lecture at the Animal Rights Conference, the closing lecture, by someone who's pretty well known in the movement. His name is Paul Watson.
Uh-huh.
He's the founder of the Sea Shepherd Society. And actually, right now, a lot of the listeners may be aware of it. There's, on Animal Planet, there's a series going on once a week called Whale Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most popular series they've ever run on Animal Planet. Millions of people are watching this all over the world. And it's the true story. I mean, they took along camera people with them to the Antarctic Ocean this past January, February, and March, when the Japanese whalers were down there slaughtering whales. And they got footage of this. They got footage of mm-hmm. killing of these whales. And hearing the whales scream as the harpoons explode in their bodies and so forth. But Paul Watson was saying that fishing and eating fish, but he said that fishermen are the worst environmental disaster happening on the planet. That there's no one attacking the ecosystems of the planet more viciously than fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
That eating fish is the most environmentally devastating thing anyone can do by far. And the oceans, because if the oceans are killed and they're on the brink of being killed by human fishing activity, that all life on the planet will die. It's all interconnected with the oceans. That having a healthy ocean
mm-hmm.
and ocean life is what really creates the whole possibility for oxygen and for the ecosystem that we're using on the land. And so we don't seem to make that connection. I guess we think that we can just destroy the oceans and everything will be fine since we're on the land.
Right,
that's not true. It's not absolutely not true. And all of the fisheries are on the brink of collapse or have already collapsed. It's just he was just talking about some of the the percentages of the devastation of fish species, which all of them, you know, are really
pretty much
wiped out.
Right, you know, we've used the ocean as a giant toilet and dumping ground for
right.
so long, and now with the reports that, you know, throughout the country and actually the whole world, but here in America, tap water, well water, lake water, all tested, all have a minimum of 22 pharmaceutical drugs in it. So if you look at that and you think about the fact that that's what the fish you're eating is swimming around in, what they're getting
right.
deformed from, and now their size is also shrinking, their physical size of the fish.
Right.
You know, it's really like, it really is an apocalyptic scenario, no matter how you look at it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And it's really important for people to understand this. I think that it's really the two sides to the thing. One side is all the pollution that we create ends up eventually in the water, and these fish it's either killing the fish or it's doing strange things to them, and it concentrates in their flesh. And we eat that flesh, or any concentrations of not only heavy metals and other things, but also of these strange pharmaceutical drugs, which actually end up in the fish, in the flesh of the fish. But on top of that, we're just overfishing them. So they're just, you know, basically fish that, like he was talking about how like 20 years ago, no one would ever eat certain kinds of fish. They were considered, you know, trash fish. And now they're considered, oh, really something that everybody wants to eat, and other kinds of fish.
Right.
Like, for example, bluefin tuna. Apparently, bluefin tuna is right on the edge of extinction. And Mitsubishi, we're talking about how Mitsubishi Corporation in Japan is actively trying to, you know, kill all the bluefin tuna so that when they do go extinct, then they have these huge freezers that will be full of the flesh of these fish, and then they'll be able to sell it for quite a few years at an extremely high price because it'll be extinct.
Right, really sick.
And so this is what's happening. I mean, we're driving a lot of these species to the brink of extinction, or actually into extinction. And I think what Stuart Weil was saying, you know, if we love the, how can we love the earth and eat fish? I mean, that's like totally insane, because it's killing the very body of the earth.
Right. So in a way, what we're really doing is committing slow suicide as the human race.
Right. And unfortunately, bringing down a lot of other species with us. I mean, that's already been happening. So the good news is that I think we are starting to wake up to this.
Well, I've noticed
the bad,
that.
You know, but the bad news is there's a lot of the media. I mean, the media and the corporations are doing everything they can to keep the message out of the media. So
right.
It's difficult for people to know. I think you're one of the only places that there's actual possibility to hear about some of this stuff.
Right, right. Well, you know, I've noticed here in Phoenix, a lot more restaurants have a lot more vegan choices on their menus, which,
yes,
I think is huge. The supermarkets have a lot more vegan choices for sale. So I think that they've gotten the hint that, A, they were missing out on a huge market.
Right.
And maybe also that they're healthier. You know, most places that post a vegan menu, even if they're India food, they pretty much always put in the words, you know, healthier choices.
Right.
And I think more Americans have become more aware of the poisons in almost everything we eat and drink.
Right. It's getting through. You know, the problem is, as your listeners know, that you can pay science to come up with any kind of results at all. And so there's still a lot of mm-hmm. messages out there still, unfortunately, that cheese is healthy, fish is healthy, chicken is healthy, something like that. And there's still, I was just in Whole Foods yesterday, and it was disturbing to see, you know, the massive amounts of chicken and fish and cheese that people were buying and was everywhere. But I think it is also, like, I heard Heather Mills, who, as everybody knows, was married to Paul McCartney up until a few years ago. She spoke in England, and she said that she had some meetings with Kraft Foods, which is one of the largest food manufacturers in the world, and that they told her in the meetings that they had with her that their lines of vegan foods are the fastest growing lines that they have. That's where the real growth is.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, optimistic. And she's talking about maybe starting a whole chain of vegan restaurants in the United States.
Well, I'd like to see somebody do some fast food vegan restaurants, you know,
right,
drive-thrus. That would be great.
Right, yeah. Well, it's currently in L.A., in the L.A. area, there's something called Veggie Grill, which is a fast food vegan restaurant with very delicious food, according to everybody. And they're trying to make it go as a chain nationally. So if anyone is interested in finding out more, you know, they're looking for people to do franchises for that. So
right. Well, you know what's interesting? I went to a networking meeting this week at a restaurant bar here in Scottsdale. And there were probably 20 women around the table, and you order your own drinks and your own food. And they had very limited food that I could actually eat. So I ordered a small veggie pizza and a basket of sweet potato fries. And when it came, the pizza didn't look appealing. As a matter of fact, my daughter was there, and she says, "Oh, that doesn't look good." But I told her, "Why don't you try it?" Needless to say, she ate half of it and said it was absolutely delicious. And there was hardly a woman at the table that didn't want to come over and sponge off my sweet potato fries. So
right.
I think that for a lot of people, they don't think about it, or they'll look at it and they'll think, ooh, you know, it's too far and it's too weird, whatever. But once they taste it, you better hold your plate back, because they're going to want to take it away from you.
Right.
So it's really just taking that chance, you know, and my listeners just need to take a chance, you know, buy some of the products, try them out, you know, dare to be bold when you go out to eat and order something vegan. First of all, the presentation's always beautiful. And it's interesting how many people want to constantly taste whatever it is that I order compared to whatever meat dish they've ordered.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's really true. You know, I was just up in Michigan. In fact, I'll be flying back there in a couple of days to do some talks in the Grand Rapids and Traverse City area. There's a couple up there who are gourmet. You know, they're gourmands. I mean, they really are into gourmet food, and they're big meat, dairy, you know, everything eaters. And they went actually on the vegan health cruise that I was speaking at last March. It goes to the Caribbean. And they said that the combination of the food, it was three meals a day that were totally vegan, and they were gourmet quality. I mean, they were absolutely incredibly delicious and very beautifully presented and everything. And the combination of that plus the lectures, you know, I gave a bunch of lectures on the cruelty involved and the spiritual deadening that happens when people eat animal foods, how it just basically disconnects us from our own wisdom and spiritual compassion and insight. And they went vegan, you know, and they are the publishers of one of the main spiritual magazines in the United States. And so it was really interesting to see how they are eating gourmet vegan food. They're putting on these beautiful gourmet vegan eating events in Traverse City. Art, you know, like right. I went to one of an art gallery opening, and they had this wonderful vegan food. And the idea that being a vegan means you don't have, you know, you're somehow deprived of the delicious food. It's really becoming totally laughable at this point, because people are really finding out it's fantastic.
Right.
And the other thing I think that's important to just kind of remember is, you know, if someone says, well, you know, what do you eat if you're a vegan? I mean, have you ever eaten an apple or an orange or, you know, some rice or potatoes or, you know, I mean, the amount of vegan food is vast. Everybody's already eating vegan food. I mean, everybody's eating already a lot of vegan food. I mean, and, you know, we all do that.
Right.
Fruits and vegetables are vegan. Nuts and seeds are vegan. Peanut butter is vegan. So is tahini. So is grains, rice, pastas, tomato sauce, you know,
right.
Salads. I mean, the amount of vegan food that, you know, is pervasive. It's everywhere. It's in every store. It's not only in health food stores. I mean, you can go to any store and, you know, go to the produce section, that's vegan food. Go to the grain section, go to the pasta section, go to, you know, all these the basic sections of the store, that's vegan food. And the idea is to get it organic and to try to get it locally grown. But still, it's essentially food that is given by the earth, by the abundance of the earth. And if we switch to these kinds of foods, as a plant-based diets, then we will be able to transform our entire culture and actually create the possibility for sustainability. And I think that's the great good news. It's not far away. It's like right here already.
Exactly. You know? Especially when you see stories, you know, even in the lying press, that 36% of adults in the United States are obese. You know, 32% of our children are obese. They have to make the food connection. Where else could it be coming from?
Right. Well, exactly. It's actually 32% are obese, and another 32% roughly are overweight. So it's that basically two-thirds are either overweight or obese. And that's already playing into a lot of other health challenges that people have that are related to being overweight, like diabetes, and lately they're saying this new swine flu especially goes after people who are overweight. So I think the message is pretty clear. I mean, it's very difficult to be overweight on a plant-based diet. It's almost impossible. You have to really
right.
work at it.
Right, unless you're eating nothing but donuts all day. That's not a vegan diet.
A lot of fat, right, exactly.
I used to know a pretty fat vegetarian, and I couldn't understand how she could be so fat until I watched what she ate, and it was like a series of donuts and potato chips and garbage food.
Well, that's a good point. You know, a lot of I think it's really important for people to realize that being, you know, eating a vegan diet doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be healthy if you eat just a bunch of junk food. And it's possible. I mean, donuts and potato chips and other things are, you know, they're not something. I think it's really important for people to eat whole, unprocessed foods. I think there's probably nothing more revolutionary and more transformational for us as a culture than to go back to eating whole foods, because first of all, and organic. I mean, this whole thing with genetically engineered foods is devastating the earth, and the processed foods, people are eating foods that basically have had the life taken out of them. And even if they're not meat and dairy, which are already you're eating a lot of death with those products, but if you're eating plant-based foods that have been given preservatives and pesticides and other things, chemicals to make them last longer, then your body is going to have to basically try to handle those things. And our bodies are really magnificent creations. I mean, they'll do the best they can with whatever we give them.
Right.
But we keep, you know, meal after meal after meal, we keep dumping into them these toxins. And I think one of the most important things to realize is that our mind, our brain, you know, our consciousness is dependent on our food. I mean, because if we're eating food that's toxic, those toxins pollute our thinking. They clog up the natural ability that we have to make connections, to be wise, sensitive beings. And pretty soon we just become disconnected, and it's no wonder that people do crazy things if they're bringing in these toxic foods. And the other thing is, when people bring in toxic foods, they bring them up, not only the grief and pain of the animals, but all the chemicals that are in these foods.
Right.
And then they're naturally, when that happens, they may maybe get some kind of physical or psychological problems. Maybe they're starting to feel anxious or depressed, or they can't sleep well. And so then they go to see a doctor or a psychiatrist, and suddenly they're being prescribed, you know, some kind of psychological drugs. I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of stuff, Zoloft or whatever. And suddenly they find that just takes the problem and makes it much, much worse. I mean, this has been happening over and over again. People suddenly becoming violent, suicidal.
Right.
And all of this can be traced back, unfortunately, to the food that they're eating.
Right.
Which sets up the creation for massive profits. I don't think people realize that the pharmaceutical industry is so huge. It's like $300 billion industry. I mean, it's a third of $1 trillion a year just in psychiatric drugs in this country. So we have to, again, I think we can look for the roots of this, actually, in the food.
Absolutely. I was, two things I wanted to talk to you about is I have some people that I know that have been vegan for a while, a couple of years. And then for whatever reason, they fell off the wagon, and maybe for a couple of weeks. And what they told me was in a few weeks of eating meat, all their old symptoms came back. They felt like crap. They had trouble sleeping. And as soon as, you know, their skin broke out, I mean, so many different things. And that on their own, they went back to a vegetarian diet. So I guess whatever mental trigger made them fall off the wagon, they immediately saw bad results within a matter of 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, that obviously makes a lot of sense. I think the only reason people... If someone becomes, say, a vegan and really gives up eating all animal foods, I think that, to me, you know, there's really no difficulty in maintaining it at all. I mean, it's just easy
right.
as can be.
Well, I think mentally they think they're missing out on something, or maybe
right.
they go to a party and, you know,
right.
like an addict of any kind, you know, it's there,
yeah.
they eat it, they get started on that bandwagon for a while.
Right.
No, but
exactly.
nothing
That's
good
the thing.
Seems
it's,
to come of it.
It's not difficult in itself. It's just the social pressure. You know, there's other people around. They're saying, have this, have that. I think at a certain point, you know, you get totally immune to that. It's like if someone was eating
right.
the flesh of some animal you would never eat, and you go, no way, I'm not going to eat that.
Right. Well, I don't even say that. Yeah. You know, my friends know all I'm going to do is say, ew, and that's it. You know, the conversation's
right.
over. The other thing I wanted to tell you is I had the opportunity to meet a doctor whose specialty is colorectal. And I was speaking with her about diet and her patients. And I, you know, she highly recommends pretty much an all-fiber diet, which, as you know, has no animal products in it at all.
Right.
But when I said to her, well, what do you think? Do you think these people have these diseases because of too much, you know, protein eating? I said, because myself, I'm a vegetarian. And she looked at me and she said, your way is the way to go. So, I mean, here's a woman who's making her living off people with bad diets. Let's face it, the human body wasn't meant to absorb or, you know, pass through animal products easily, who also recommends a high-fiber vegetarian diet.
Right. Well, you know, that's great, you know, and it's great to hear her actually say that. I just heard someone yesterday was telling me that they did a survey of people who are going to become doctors, and right before they entered medical school, they just asked them, what do you think is the best way for people to be healthy, through nutrition or through drugs and pharmaceuticals? And 70% said through nutrition, 30% said through drugs.
Hmm.
And then 4 years later, after they finished their medical training, they asked the same questions, and it switched exactly. It switched to 70% said drugs and 30% said nutrition.
Wow, that's
after they'd gone through the medical training. So I think it's pretty clear that your friend is a little bit of an unusual doctor in the sense. I mean, she's one of the 30% that's still
hasn't been programmed
and brainwashed by the pharmaceutical industry going through her doctoral training.
Right, but you know, one other thing I noticed was she looked extremely healthy. She was fit. She was in good shape.
Right.
And I could see her mental attitude very easily through the clarity in her eyes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And you know. When she showed me the brochure of what she recommends her patients eat, I laughed because there was absolutely no animal products on there whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, it's absolutely obvious. I mean, anyone with even a few brain cells functioning could see that in order to have a healthy colon, you need to have fiber because the kind of food we're designed for, we have a very long intestinal system. You have to have fiber to kind of keep things moving and keep the thing clean. And dairy products and eggs and the flesh of any animal has zero fiber. There's no fiber at all. In fact, it's just the opposite, especially dairy has casein, which is a glue. If you see Elmer's glue, you know, this glue, casein is a very impermeable, tough glue. It's water resistant, and it coats the inside of the intestines, so nutrients can't get through. I mean, a lot of people eat so much, and they're always hungry because they eat cheese, which coats the inside of the intestine with casein, and the nutrients can't get through, and it sets up the conditions also eventually for colorectal problems. But these are things that are really obvious, and to me, it's amazing that there's still so much confusion around it. And I think part of it's because, unfortunately, the AMA and the medical system in general is set up that the more profit is made, the sicker people are. So if you don't tell them this,
right,
you know, you'll make more money. I mean,
right.
It's so interesting
right.
to see the kind of meals that are served in the hospitals. Mm. They're exactly the kind of meals that bring people into the hospitals, you know, meals that are designed to cause obesity and diabetes and heart disease and cancer and liver disease and all these things. So.
Right.
I really commend your friend for speaking the truth, and you know if she keeps saying that enough, then she'll put herself out of business. You know, because people, there's no reason to have any of these problems if we eat a decent
right.
diet.
Well, I'm sure there'll be no lack of
part
of the pun.
Right?
There'll be no lack of asses going towards her way anytime soon. when people ask me about being a vegetarian. And they come up with some pretty weird questions. I find the best answer to give them is one sentence. I'm compassionate where animals are concerned. That ends the conversation. You don't have to keep going. You know what I mean? You don't have to pretend that you're a saint or you're better than them. You just make it that, you know, I actually do it because I'm an animal rights activist and I can't be a part of that. And that's the end of it. You know, if you go into, you know, for health, for this, for that, you know, you lose people because they're going to look to pick on, you know, whatever. And come up with a million excuses.
Right.
But one thing that's
true. That's,
yeah. You know, one thing that's pretty weird is my kids and myself have noticed, but my daughter actually brought it to my acting attention last week, which I hadn't noticed, Will. She said, "Why is your skin so shiny?" And I thought about it because I don't use any lotions or crap because, you know, I know that's a waste of time and money because your skin starts in your stomach. And I hadn't really realized how shiny my skin is. And it's not oily. It's just shiny, healthy, shiny. And
radiant.
I said, wow, that must be from being a vegetarian because it sure ain't because I'm using $50 creams on my body.
Exactly. Well, there's so many wonderful side benefits. I mean, people always say, you know, Will, you ought to tell people how old you are.
Right.
You know, because, you know, I was born in 1953, and people think I'm in my 30s. You know, they really do. I mean, you know, I'm getting close to 60, but they think I'm only in my 30s. And this is true with my wife. I think it's true with a lot of people. I mean, people in the United States age faster than probably almost anybody on the planet. We get old very fast because we're eating death all the time. We're eating all this death, and we get old.
Right.
And I think
we also live stressful lives, more stress than anybody else on the planet, I'm sure.
Right.
Seems the more we have, the more stress we have.
Well, we stress these animals. You know, we're stressing millions of animals, and so it comes back that we're going to be stressed. How else could it be?
Exactly. Will, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, let's do a little recap on your book. We haven't, you know, focused on your book in a while. I'm speaking with Will Tuttle, and we will be right back. So stay with us.
The Maria Show is now in its ninth year, and for good reason. People can recognize the truth when they hear it. Everything in the universe resonates, either to fear or love. Maria comes from love, presenting the real truth about our past, present, and potential future for those who are open to hear it. You're listening. Now make the commitment to subscribe and donate to the show. Maria.net is the one place to go to find out everything about everything and why things have evolved as they have. A more complete education doesn't exist anywhere else. Maria has no agenda but to inform those with ears to hear what's happened, happening, and how we can work together to effect positive change. We are the ones we've been waiting for, and we didn't come here to lose. Drop the red pill. Subscribe today. www.maria.net. That's MERIA.net.
Okay, I'm back, and you're listening to Food for Thought with myself, my co-host, Will Tuttle. Get over to circleofcompassion.org. WillTuttle.com, and as a spiritual teacher, a Reiki master, an environmentalist, an animal rights person, I cannot stress the importance of Will's book as being one book on this topic. If you never buy any other book, this is the one you need to have, because he's the only one brave enough to tell you that all the truth. The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. And as you remember when we started, Will, which seems like a million years ago, one of the things that I really loved about your book is you were one of the bravest people to actually talk about spiritual health in connection with your diet, where a lot of people will not even go anywhere near that subject.
Yeah, I think that's the frontier. You know, that's the next stage in bringing the conversation that we're having in our culture to the next highest level. You know, I think we're finally getting to the point where we're starting to understand our connection with the earth, with each other, with the universe, with animals, with all beings. And this curtain that we've had is pulled, and we didn't want to look behind it, which is pulled by the media and by the industries, so that we don't really ever see the violence that we're committing and the atrocities, really, that we're committing towards animals for food every single day that we're paying for, this is really the most powerful, most highest leverage, I guess you'd say, way that we can transform our culture's consciousness, because we're voting with our dollars. You know, when we take out our money, we're paying for what we want to have happen, what we want to see more of in the world. And so when we're paying for misery and violence, paying other people to do horrific actions against sentient beings who feel, you know, just like we do, then spiritually we begin to shrink, and intellectually we begin to shrink, and emotionally we begin to shrink, and we become warped. You know, we become very distorted. Mm-hmm. Violence towards these animals becomes part of our nature, and before long we're it's just a very short step to paying for wars against people and wars against the earth, wars against other humans. And so the spiritual health, the spiritual dimension is the key. I think everyone knows that we yearn for world peace, for a situation where we're in harmony, where we can enjoy our loved ones and ourselves. And this is really what animals want also. They want the same thing. So who are we to deny them that? The violence that we inflict on them actually destroys our hope for world peace. It destroys our hope for happiness, for spiritual clarity. And what I think actually is that, and historically, I think if you go back far enough, you'll find that people understood this in earlier times, mm-hmm. that people were much more vegetarian oriented, and they had a sense of the beauty of living in communities where they gardened and grew their own food and had their own fruit trees and vegetables, and that they lived essentially in a peaceful way. Mm-hmm. But I think our historians have warped things quite a bit and portrayed those earlier times as somehow as dark and primitive. But I think actually our history has been stolen from us, and that these earlier times were much more beautiful and joyful and creative, and that I think, I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but I have a feeling it was some priests in Egypt, possibly. I mean, there's different, somewhat different theories about this, but at some point, an elite emerged that had the ability to try to enslave the mass of humanity, and the most powerful way to do that was to get these people to eat meat and to eat the foods especially of enslaved animals, to get them to herd animals, to own animals, to kill animals, to steal their babies, steal their milk. But these kinds of actions would bring out the worst in people. It would make them very disconnected from their natural power and wisdom and beauty and might, mm-hmm. and make them easily controlled, make it easy for them to go to war, to fight, make them very self-centered, self-conscious, and that it would slow down their thinking, and it would make them less bright, much less able to make connections, because they would learn not to make the connections with the animals that they're brutalizing. And so if you want to enslave a population, the way to do it is to get them to eat the flesh and secretions of animals that they have enslaved. And once you get them to do that, you've mm-hmm. got them controlled. They will always be your slaves, because right. they're enslaving others. Whatever they sow, they will reap. Whatever we sow, we will reap. And so it's very simple. So if we really are serious about wanting not to be slaves ourselves, not to create a culture where there's a elite class that enslaves everyone else, we have to ourselves understand the history, understand what happened, mm-hmm. and set free those who we are enslaving. And not only will we have, like we've been talking about, a lot healthier, physically healthier lives, but we'll be psychologically and spiritually much healthier as well. And everything else goes from that, the environmental health, all of it. Mm-hmm. This is the most important message that anyone, I think, can ever understand. It's really crying to be said. And the amazing thing is how difficult it is to get this actual message into the media. It's almost like the powers that be know that this message is the one message that they are not going to allow anyone to ever speak. And I've noticed it myself. It's very hard to get this message out there because it goes against everything at such a deep level.
Right. Now, I'm sure you haven't had time, but I know you have a subscription. So I'd like you, Will, to go into the archives the past few weeks and listen to the interview I did with Stuart Wilde. Stuart Wilde is a world-famous author. And he's a very spiritual person with a very twisted sense of humor. And when I was reading his book, there were parts of his book that reminded me of yours. And the reason being that he talks about the importance of the animals. According to him, animals are our protector. They are smarter than people. They are here to help us, to guide us. And he also makes a couple of statements in this book, and he says that no person who's ever made it to the Lake of Avalon, which is other dimensions after death, was a meat eater. He says that clearly in his book. And he says you can't make it to other dimensions without the animals because they're the guardians at the door. He said almost no one knows that fact, but it's true. And they're keepers of human information, et cetera, et cetera. But he gets on to talk a little bit more, and it's pretty strong stuff. You know, I said, wow, this book is pretty strong. I'm glad he said it. I didn't. But when he talks about the Western world and our lifestyle, he compares a lot of us to ghouls because the things we do are very ghoulish. And he
right.
talks specifically to obesity in here. And if you're okay with it, I'd like to read a little of it.
Yeah.
He says, the irreverence of obesity is obvious to see. It often hangs as unprocessed fear. You can see it as fat in their yellow eyes. It's usually the disease of killers, as one can often see thousands of animal carcasses in the person's belly. The agony of those creatures' deaths linger as a foul karma. I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. I had to read that like three times.
Right. Well, he's right. And I actually say that exactly the same thing in the chapter in the World Peace Diet on the intelligence of human physiology, where I talk about how the fat that people wear on their bones, and the excess fat, is mainly the fat of brutalized, terrorized animals, and it's no wonder that people are so anxious to get rid of it. You know, they know that they don't want to have this on them, but it is. And I think I'm really glad that he said it so explicitly because in earlier times, anyway, we had this basic understanding that untrammeled greed is a vice. You know,
mm-hmm.
that just consuming and consuming and consuming is
right.
not something to be proud of. It's almost like in our culture today, it's something to be proud of. Whoever can consume the most is somehow considered, has the highest social status.
Right.
The opposite, really.
Right, exactly. Well, see, that's where he goes on, and it does remind me, it's a way different book than yours, but he does have a lot of stuff that's kind of similar in a way.
Right.
He goes on to say, and which is exactly what you just said, just in different words. He says, it's really scary to watch these frightening levels of indifference and callousness in the act of satisfying self. It's a death sentence for the soul, as obese people can't ever escape their irreverence, for it walks around with them and disgusts the spirits with every step. He said, if you want to avoid Gaia's ire, you have to tackle obesity in every form. Food, alcohol, drugs, too much talking, too much activity, too much consumption, too much shouting, too many emotions, too much noise, too much nastiness, and so forth. To be in harmony with Gaia, you should consume as little as possible and make do with only a few possessions, tools you need for work, say, and not much else. And to take a soft eye, have a soft eye for humanity and animals.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that's exactly what we're talking about, you know, with the World Peace Diet. It's minimizing our consumption of the precious resources on this earth. And the more we do that, the happier we are. And this whole idea that somehow the one who consumes the most is the happiest is completely reversed. And I've just discovered that living in an RV, you know, we if I want to buy a new pair of pants, I have to give away a pair of pants. You know, I don't have room to put another pair of pants in. And it's just a great practice in mindful consumption to try to really minimize the extra stuff we buy or use. And this is, I think, probably the greatest way to liberation is to buy less stuff.
Well, you know, the past few weeks I've been getting very strongly the message that I need to minimize my entire life. I need to liquidate my life. I need to get it down to where all I need is a laptop and a studio apartment and just get rid of everything else. And the feeling, you know, continues to get stronger and stronger. So I've kind of trying now to figure out a 2-year plan to make that happen. I don't know if it's just me or if that's an awareness that people are feeling more so now around the planet. But I think, you know, it's a good thing to do. I mean, less is truly best instead of what we've been taught. You know, whoever dies with the most toys wins, which is ridiculous.
Right, exactly. Marie, I think, again, we have to be aware of the role in the media in all this and question the underlying assumptions of a capitalist system that is it going to always try to encourage people to buy more than they actually need.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in the World Peace Diet that I found very interesting in the research that I did was to make the connection between herding animals and capitalism. Mm-hmm. As a type of economic system where you have a wealthy elite that owns the means of production, and they basically dominate not only the means of production, which in the early days was the animals that they owned, which were the source of wealth back mm-hmm. 10,000 years ago in Iraq when this all started,
right.
But also the people, you know, that they had these people working for them, but there was early on a connection between war and capital accumulation, that the fastest way for them to get rich was to go to war, and that people didn't want to, nobody wanted to go to war. I mean, it was one of the worst things anyone could ever do, but because the stakes were so high, I mean, people were, if you lost the war, you became enslaved, and the only ones who really ever wanted to go to war would be wealthy elite, and they always somehow trick everybody else into going along with them.
Right.
Yeah. And the reason we're all so able to be tricked into doing that is because we're engaging in our own war against the animals by eating them.
Right.
So I think people in our culture are under the illusion that they vote when they vote in the elections.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to just say it again, that the real vote that we have is every day with our dollars. What are we voting for? And what are we voting to think about? What are we voting to talk about? But especially, what are we voting to buy? That's the real action
uh-huh.
that determines our culture. And so all of us, we have the possibility to eat a plant-based diet that does not cause misery and violence to the ecosystem and to animals.
And cost a lot less. Let's not leave that out. It costs you a lot less. People say, oh, organic vegetables are so expensive. But if they think about what they're paying for meat and what they're paying for doctors and drugs, it's almost like eating for free by comparison.
It is. You know, I mean, I'm telling you, I haven't been to, I haven't had a cavity, for example, in 35 years. I haven't had to go to the drugstore and buy one little thing, you know, aspirin, Tylenol, whatever you can think of, you know, all the typical drugs that people always need when they're eating animal-based foods, because as someone eating a whole food plant-based diet, I just don't get sick. You know, it's been like that for 35 years, so it's been.
I don't remember the last time I was sick and had to go to a doctor.
So, right.
You know, that's a big plus.
Exactly. Yeah, we put too much into our bodies too, I think. I mean, I remember thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about, like, if someone was working at a job where, say, they had boxes that came in, and they had to, you know, cut up the boxes and send them out. And then the most they could do in a day, say, was 15 pounds a day.
Right.
Every day they got 20 pounds. Every single day they got 20 pounds of boxes, so they're able to take 15 pounds, and they can cut them up and send them on. But there's 5 pounds of boxes that they can't do anything with. So after 7 days, you know, they've got 35 pounds of boxes they don't know what to do with, And it goes on day after day after day. And that's the same thing with what's happening when people are eating the kind of diet that we have. You know, we just are eating too much, and our bodies can't handle that much properly.
Right.
And so it just adds up. It just becomes basically extra weight.
Right.
And the other thing, I think...
But then everybody has to suffer, because I can tell you that if you go to a beach or you go to a public pool or whatever, I have to tell you, and the analogy I use isn't too different from your box analogy. You might want to use this one, Will. I look at some people and I say, wow, that's, you know, trying to fit 10 pounds of sausage into a 5-pound skin. And, you know, people really do start to look like the fat they eat. It's
right.
Almost like I can tell what they eat just by looking at where the fat deposits are.
Right.
And yet they still in their mind still think that they're, you know, 5 sizes thinner because they haven't seen all those boxes accumulate like you're saying.
Right.
And it's like, how can they not know that they're becoming obese and squeezing out of their swimsuits, which to me is, you know, there used to be a joke in Brooklyn. I used to call it... committing a crime due to extreme shock value on how you present yourself to the world. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like an attack with a deadly weapon, your presentation. And, you know, when I look at people, I can actually see that they're gray. How can they not see their skin is gray?
Right. Well, you're right. No, I never thought of that, actually, but it's true. Like if someone is really vibrant and healthy, has been eating a good, healthy, nutritious, cruelty-free diet, and our eyes look at that person, it's like we just feel better. In every cell of our being, we kind of feel lighter, we feel happy, we feel, wow, energized, seeing such a vibrant, radiant person.
Mm.
And we see someone like that, and it's like our whole body kind of goes, oh, you know, we feel
it's
kind of
sad.
Low, we feel kind of down, we feel kind of sad, we feel kind of depressed.
It saddens me.
Yeah, it hurts everybody on that level.
You know, and when you're shopping, you know, I mean, people always look at what I'm buying oddly when I have it on the checkout. And I guess it's the lack of what I'm not buying that makes them look at that, and they give me, like, weird looks. But I can look at what they're buying, you know, the people in front of me and behind me, and I look at their physical state and their aura, and I can tell and it so easily see the connection between what they're eating and why they look the way they do.
Right.
And I'm not just talking about whether they're attractive or not. I look beyond that. I look at, you know, the curved shoulders, the hunched walk, looking down when they're walking, the grayness to their aura, their tone of their hair. You can see it everywhere, and these people are slowly poisoning themselves. And it's all I can do to say, you know, why are you buying, you know, 6 cases of friggin' Coca-Cola and, you know, canned soup, which is nothing but salt and crap, and, you know, the hunks and hunks of meat and you know, just the worst, you know, white bread. And then they'll always put something healthy like yogurt or some low-fat cookies in there. Which is another fallacy, you know, the whole low-fat, no-fat crap that passes for food in this country. And I really do feel sorry for them because they don't know any better. And the sad thing is their mind is so numbed down that they're not open to hearing it. And they're just going to go through the whole medical pharmaceutical route until that is the finishing touch that takes them out at an early age.
Yeah.
And it's very sad. It's sad to me because, you know, life and the secrets of life are very simple. It's just our programming that's made it so deep and so confusing that most people become sheeple. And then they end up literally being dead ducks, from sitting duck to dead duck.
Yeah, well, you've pretty much summed it up there. And I would have to just add that hurts all of us. I mean, we're all interconnected. So, you know, we not only do we end up paying much higher insurance rates, all of us, if we do, I don't even have any health insurance, but you know, if I did,
right.
We pay for it in higher prices for everything because, you know, corporations are paying my health insurance. And so you have a lot of sick people. It's just, it brings everybody down.
Right. So
and,
you have to say who benefits?
Yeah.
Who benefits? Right. Certainly not the consumer. They're not benefiting. So you got to look at, do you want to feed the pharmaceutical industry, which is, you know, a big part of why we go to war.
Right.
So right. It's really making a lot of important decisions and teaching anyone that'll listen to you. I mean, not everybody's open to hearing this. And like I said, I'll shut them down with one sentence if I sense that it's just going to be an argument. I don't want to argue. But, you know, yesterday I had lunch with a friend who's became vegan. And she looks better every time I see her. She was just shining and glistening. And she looked 5 years younger. That I actually said to her, did you do something different with your hair? Because I couldn't, lock in to what was different about her.
Right.
This is something that's accessible to everybody. You know, I'm not begging people to do it. It's everybody's individual choice. But if we're here and we're going to live and you want to live a long life, what's the point if you're not healthy and you're not at peace? You know, I remember when I was young, my dad, when he used to get excitable, he used to say, I got to have peace in my life. That was the most important thing to him. And I could never understand what he meant by that until I was 50 and older. And I realized how important it is to have a peace inside yourself, a peace in your surroundings, because the rest of the world is chaotic and is in a frenzy. But if you have that inner peace, you can walk among them and still keep your cool.
Right. Well, that's it. You know, that's the truth. And ultimately, though, I guess the thing is that we're all interconnected. So, you know, ultimately, I'm never truly going to have peace as long as other people are suffering.
Right.
That's why I have to act to help others. Why I have to. I can't just sit here and be a vegan and not tell anybody.
Right.
You know, that I'm called to bless the world as much as I can, because we're all interconnected. And if people are or animals anywhere are being brutalized, and that hurts me also, because I include everyone.
Right. Well, Will, no one can ever accuse you of not living your mission in this life and not doing everything you know how to do. So, you know, you need to be complimented. You know, you're actually a teacher that walks their talk, you know, where others just talk it, you know, but they don't walk it. So, Will, this has been great covering the World Peace Diet with you, doing this show, and I surely like it if you'll join me every so often, even if it's for, you know, just a short time on air during a news show or something.
Sounds like a great idea. I'll definitely keep that in mind and keep knowing that your show is one of the beacons of light in our world, and I'm so glad to have had this opportunity over the last few years to be part of it. And I just wish all of the listeners just a healthy, happy, spiritually aware days, weeks, and months ahead, that we are part of an awakening on this planet of human consciousness for the benefit of all.
Mm-hmm. Well, please stay in touch, Will. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks so much, Maria.
You're very welcome. Will Tuttle, more like, where's Waldo? Will's going to just keep on doing what he does, I'm sure, for the rest of his life, because he's found his place. I hope you enjoyed the show, and as I said, I'm always happy to have Will back on when he does have time between his travels. And remember, it's your decision what you do. I'm just the messenger, okay? My life doesn't really change all that much depending on what other people do. I just do what I do, and I guess I found what I'm here to do until the next door opens. Anyway, thanks for supporting the show. Some of you have been with me since the beginning. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, and I'll see you guys next time. Thanks.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.